Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 144, TSR Podcast Network with Peter Bryant. So, for all of you longtime and new listeners, you're in for a treat because we have a guest here who's been on a few times and he's pretty incredible. It always makes for a fun and exciting show. And I want to remind all of you that you're probably going to not be able to keep up with everything. We talk about all sorts of stuff. You might be driving to work or at the gym or playing a game or whatever. So you don't need to worry about remembering all the stuff we cover. You do need to remember one thing, and that's a link to our show notes. Remember wargamingrecon.com/WR144. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR144. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our very special guest here, Peter Bryant, and people know you as Blix. So I'd like to say welcome to the show.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, I realized I was looking back in the last time you were on, it's been a while because it was episode 110 where you were talking about restarting what is now known as the Mythwits podcast. And then before that, you were on episode 94 for your Kickstarter on Rogue Chess.
Yes.
Yeah. Both were very exciting shows, and you've been doing a ton of stuff with Mythwits lately. So you're doing a new adventure, I guess you could say now. Yeah. TSR Podcast Network.
Yes. Yes. So we had Jason Elliott on the Mythwits, and after that episode, he contacted me and said, hey, you know, I was looking to do start a podcasting network for TSR. And he's like, I'd like you to produce a couple of the shows for me. And I was not thinking straight. And I said, sure, yeah, I can do two more podcasts. What the heck, right? And so he wanted to, one of the ones he wanted to do was Cube of Death, which is a game I run at TotalCon every year. Well, not every year. Most years I run it. And it's basically a trivia RPG. So you go on this adventure, and the game master puts you up against things. You take turns to competition, and then as you're asked questions, if you answer them correctly, you don't take damage, or you might get a treasure, or you might damage another person or whatever. If you get the question wrong, you take damage. So that was like, he wanted to make a podcast out of that. And I thought, wow, that's cool. You know, he wanted to do this for my game and everything. And, you know, I still maintain all the rights to the game and everything. It's just, the podcast is theirs. So I was like, yeah, all right. Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. And, James Carpio was, he had talked to James about, I think James brought it up to him. And, so James wanted to be the host of that. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. You know, James, he's run it at Kineticon a couple times. So we did that. And then he also wanted me to do another one where we play role-playing games online and interview the creators. So that was kind of cool. So yeah.
Those are, first of all, for people who've never had the pleasure of seeing Cube of Death being played, I think this is a great way to really do it because, I've been a contestant, not on the podcast version, but at TotalCon, and it's a lot of fun. Just really insightful questions, make you think, but you have a really good time with it. And if you get the right group of people, you have a blast. So being able to hear that on a podcast is fantastic. And I'm very personally very excited about it, being on the network. The other show I think is really different, which is important because there's so many gaming podcasts out there, so many RPG podcasts and everything. And like, how do you stand out? So by having the creators on and playing the games, I think you guys have managed to find a way to blend things together perfectly for a nice result.
Yeah. You know what? And that one was Jason Elliott's idea. And when he told me that, I was like, oh man, that is a good idea. Because, you know, you have podcasts where they do live play. So like, I think was it Monkey Stole My Jetpack is one of them. There's a bunch of them where they, you know, it's live gameplay. And I personally don't like listening to other people play games. I don't know what it is, but it just doesn't, it doesn't work for me. I know a lot of people like it. They really enjoy listening to other gamers play, especially if they're entertaining. I just can't, I can't do it. There's other, like a million and one RPG podcasts where they talk about games. And that's cool. You know, they're good. But I don't like doing stuff that other people are doing. Like I just feel like unless I'm really, really going to add something to it, like if I had the ego that, oh yeah, but mine's going to be different because I'm more talented or something like that, you know, then maybe I would consider it, but I don't have that kind of ego. So I was like, we got to really do something different. But when he came to me with that and he said, yeah, it's going to be a game where we interview the creator of the game, or at least one of the writers, one of the creators. It's not always like the man. Sometimes it's, you know, one of the writers or something like that, which works. That qualifies. But then we're going to play a game with them. We're going to go over character creation. We're going to go over mechanics, and then we're going to take that character that we went over and we're going to use that in the adventure for like just a 15-minute adventure, just to give the listener a chance to like be immersed in the game, but the game being run by the creator. So that was like, all right, I'm in. That's good. That's good. And it has, oh my God, it has been really good. Been some really good episodes.
Way back in the day when I first kind of tried to get started with our RPGs, one of the things that really held me up was trying to understand what was being intended with the roles and actual character creation, and like, how do you get beyond that? And I just spent 7 hours trying to make a character. And of course, then I lost interest. If something like this existed then, it would have been perfect for someone like me, because then I could tune in and be like, oh, I want to try this game. But right. Before I buy, let me see how it goes. Because by having that creator, you're able to sort of get the behind-the-scenes peek at things and get maybe some of the questions answered better than you would by just looking at the rules.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, and for me, like the biggest selling point to me, or the biggest thing I think is a great selling point for it, is that so there's a million games on the market, especially since you got RPG now, and people can just, they have the freedom to make games and put them up online. And I think that's the greatest thing ever. But at the same time, it's a curse. It's a blessing and a curse. And so the blessing is that creators are not beholden to anyone anymore. Anyone can create a game and get it into the market, which is awesome. But at the same time, anyone can create a game and get it into the market. So how do you know? You know, how do you know what games you're going to like? I'm straying away from what games are good, because I have this philosophy that, there are only a handful of games that are bad. And I won't go into that. That's a whole podcast right there. But for the most part, most of the time, a game is just not your flavor. It's just not what you want to play, or you don't like the system, or you don't like the feel of the game, whatever reason it is, it's just not for you. But how do you parse that out from looking at an RPG now? I mean, you can look at reviews. Okay, well that's somebody who read it and said, oh yeah, I really like this game. Okay. But what does that really tell you about the game or the mechanics, or you know, are they heavy mechanics? Are they light mechanics? Is it a fast paced game? Is it slow paced? Is it political? Is it, you know, how do you know what the game is like? But with this, you get that. I mean, we make sure we hit those points so that someone can be like, oh, this is the game for me, you know, or this is not the game for me. Cause we're not trying to sell the person's game. We promote it as best we can, obviously, because, you know, the guest comes on and, you know, we want them to be successful. We want their games to sell and everything like that. But at the same time, you know, we don't try to make anything it's not. We don't try to blow it up anywhere beyond what it is. We, you know, we're kind of beholden to our fans. So, you know, we're trying to make sure that you get the, what the game really is and not just a sales pitch. But at the same time, again, we're nice to our guests. So it's a fine line you dance, you know. So you're like, oh, this is really awesome. Had a great time with it. Hope you like it.
Well, I got a little bit of feedback, is how I'm going to phrase it, for an episode I did a little while ago, where it was one of those things where me and a guest were talking about a product created by this other company, and going into it, I thought I was going to love that product, and I was all excited because I hadn't talked about that company in years, almost a decade, I think. And then I started like looking at stuff, and I was like, well, there's this I don't like, and I don't like that, and I don't like that, but I hadn't played the game, just going right by the rules and looking and saying, this doesn't make sense. Why would they do that? And I think I used words like dumb and stupid, and they were probably words I shouldn't use.
Right, right.
But valid emotional response. And it was offset by my guest who, had a more positive reaction to it. But some people who had, heard it, rightly so said, well, if you play the game, You're not going to get this kind of reaction. Right. So it's good because, you know, going into it, I'm like, oh, this is great. It's great. Or the last episode I did, I talked about these tufts that are, it's going to sound dumb to some people, but when you do miniatures gaming, say you want to get your figs for D&D or whatever, right, and you want to paint them up and you want to get them looking really nice, you put them on a base and you want to make the base look really cool. There's these tufts from Australia that are fantastic, Leadbeer's tufts. And I'm gushing about these things that people probably thought I was paid off to talk about it. And I was, I paid full price for my product, but it's something that I believe in. And, sometimes things like that can skew towards infomercial and, you know, set it and forget it.
But you know, there's nothing, I don't see anything wrong with that because, you know, you have your own podcast and people should realize that your podcast is, you know, you're not being paid to do this really. I can't remember if you have a Patreon or not, but maybe you make a little bit of money or what, doesn't matter. You are not like a big corporate indie. You're not, you know, big podcasting. So, you're not on their payroll. So if you want to gush about something, you can gush about it. That's fine. I think people understand that, you know, that's it's your opinion, but, you know, again, you're right. There's that line of, you're providing a service, so you got your show. Your show is a service, really, for people. You want to entertain them, but you also, I imagine you do this so that people get good information about the things you're talking about. So you're right. You don't want to skew them and say, oh, it's the greatest thing ever. And then, you know, they go and buy it and say, oh, this sucks. Jonathan, why did you do this to me? But I think people really need to understand that when you say this is awesome, it's like, this is Jonathan's opinion that this is awesome. Or in my case, this is, you know, this is Pete's opinion that this is awesome. You know, you guys always have to take that with a grain of salt. Like, you may not like this, but you can't always be saying that, you know, every time you say something like, oh, this is a great miniature, but you may not like that. Oh, these are great bases, but you may not like them. So, you know, you just kind of go with the flow, I think.
But my wife, not to go too far off of a slant, but my wife and I love this TV show, The Good Wife. And I don't know if you're familiar with it or if your wife or anyone likes it, but it's a court kind of legal drama. So there's this one judge who shows up every so often, and whenever the attorneys speak, she'll stop and just stare at them and she'll rule against them if they don't say the words, in my opinion, at the end of everything they say. It's like, good morning, judge, in my opinion. It just shows the absurdity of it. At the end of the day, neither you nor I are Leo Laporte or Adam Carolla or anything like that. You know, it's not our business to be doing podcasting. It's not how we pay our bills, our mortgage, or whatever. And all the stuff is really our opinion on things, unless, you know, we say otherwise. I would presume for you, and it's a fact for me, I don't knowingly plan to talk about anything or have anyone on the show who I don't like or I don't believe in. So if I hate something, you can probably tell I hate it because I don't talk about it.
Right, right. Yeah, I've had a lot of thought about that because, you know, for Mythwits, I bring on a lot of guests. And, well, I guess, I don't know. I mean, crap, for all my shows, you know, because we're always, I hadn't realized it yet, but I am guest heavy like crazy for everything. So like Mythwits, always have a guest. Cube of Death, we always have three guests playing. You know, our contestants are always guests. Mm-hmm. And we try to get people from industry or it's people who have something to promote for the most part. That's sort of the model. And then for game school, yeah, they're always industry people. So yeah, I think everything I do has guests on. But I have a personal policy. I'm not going to grill people with the hard questions. I'm not an investigative reporter. So when I have someone on my show, it's kind of like my home and I'm inviting them in. And I may have somebody over that I don't agree with everything that they do in life or, you know, all their opinions or whatever. I may disagree with them on something. It might be a hardcore Republican or hardcore Democrat, because I'm neither one, I'm an independent, so it's kind of hard for me to find a lot of people who are, you know, lined up with me. But anyway, and I can have both of them in my house. I could have a hardcore liberal and a hardcore conservative in my house, and I'm still going to treat both of them very nicely, and I'm going to encourage them to treat each other nicely, because this is, you know, this is our home environment. We're having a good time. So, you know, let's all be polite and enjoy each other's company. And if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all, you know? So, for example, so for game school, we obviously have people who come on and, there's multiple systems that are D20 versions, you know, so like, we just had somebody on who had a game that's basically like OGL or there's a throwback, is like an OGL type throwback. I don't personally like OGL. I don't personally like level systems. I don't play D&D. I have no intent and probably never will play D&D again unless it's like a one-off or at a convention or something. I might go and play one game just to see. Like, I want to play 5th edition just to see what it's like. But I'm not, I can almost guarantee you I'm not going to go buy 5th edition books and start playing D&D. But that doesn't mean I can't have someone on and talk about the positive aspects of it. You know what I mean? But it's just personally not my taste. But I can look at it and go, oh, you know, if I did play D&D, this setting is really cool and I really like the stuff you did with it and the art is beautiful and you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, you can be positive about something without having to love it or even play it yourself, I think.
No, I agree with you. I try to tell people to think of conversing with me as like a Barbara Walters interview. There's mm-hmm. not going to be anything shocking. We're not going to try to expose any scandals or deep faults in whatever's going on. But we're there to have a good, fun time and try to convey some information that'll be helpful to people. And I think people really appreciate that because I think in life they're just so bombarded by all these messages trying to get us to do something or not do something. So being able to listen to a show like, say, Cube of Death or listen to Game School would be really helpful because they can get the information but it's not shoved down their throat.
Right. Yeah. And you know, like, for example, for Mythwits, we had guys come on about colony collapse disorder, talking about the bees, you know, the problem with the bees. And one of the guys, he said, look, you know, I do want to come on. I think it'd be awesome, but, I hope you understand, you know, I am a consultant for Monsanto. And he's like, that could be an issue for you guys, you know, cause I don't know, cause it's, Monsanto has their own, you know, so many people hate Monsanto. And I'm just like, I told him, I was like, look, I'm not going to talk about anything you don't want to talk about. I was like, you're my guest. You know, you tell me what you want to talk about. We'll talk about it. I was like, if you look at any of my other scientific interviews, you know, cause like things come up, we talk about, you know, global issues and stuff. We don't get political. We don't have, Mythwits does not have a political stance. The only political stance we have, and it's not even a political stance, some people think it is we are pro-science. That's it. That's the only stance we take is we're pro-science. But other than that, you know, you just don't, like you said, you're like Barbara Walters, you know, I don't mind throwing softballs. That's my show, you know, and I'm proud of that. You know, I'm good with it. If you want investigative journalism, you can watch something else. But yeah, and Game School's like that too. You know, we basically treat our guests like they're the, you know, we roll out the red carpet for them and we run the game. But so, the Cube of Death, that's another area where we do that kind of thing. You know, we actually have three guests on and we let them promote their stuff and talk about it a little bit too.
Why don't we rewind a little bit and talk about the network itself? Cause I think it's, okay. I mean, like we said earlier, there's a lot of different, gaming related podcasts and kind of talked a little bit about what separates Game School and Cube of Death. But, let's talk about the TSR podcast network. Why does it exist? And what else might be coming forward and that sort of stuff.
Okay. So yeah. So TSR relaunched let's take it back in time. So TSR Games was Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson and a few other people in the early days. They made a little game called D&D. They got really big. Things changed, you know, hands changed, as corporations do, as things incorporate money and people and blah, blah, blah. Eventually Gary was ousted out of the company. I think Dave Arneson left early. So then it wasn't even like the originators really for the most part. And then they were bought by Wizards of the Coast because the company was tanking. And so Wizards of the Coast took it and they revamped the whole company and did some really great stuff. And then they were bought by Hasbro. So in that time frame where they were Wizards and then Hasbro, they're still Wizards, but they're in my house, whatever. The TSR logo had lapsed. The trademark on it had lapsed. So, Jason Elliott had noticed that and he contacted Luke and Ernie and Gygax, Gary's sons, and said, hey, let's start TSR back up again. Now, it's not the same TSR, obviously. They're, as far as I know, they're not doing anything actual role-playing game, although there may be some rumors about that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything. The only thing I would know is a rumor. I'm not privy to that kind of knowledge. But so if they come out with a role playing game, don't shun on me because I don't know. But but anyway, so they released Gygax Magazine, which was a throwback to Dragon Magazine. It was sort of like recapturing that. I mean, it's not the same magazine, obviously, but it's similar. And they brought Tim Cass back on, who did the original Dragon. So it's kind of like a resurrection, you know, it's a different creature, but it's alive again. And, so Jason wanted to start a podcast network because podcasts reach a lot of people. It's awesome to entertain it, and it's a way to grow the TSR audience, on a different, you know, from a different level. So he wanted to do a network. So the first two shows are Game School and Cube of Death. I do know that there is another show in the works. I'm not producing it. I don't think I'm allowed to say what it is, and I don't know totally, but it's going to be, I can tell you this, it's not going to be anything like the other two. So it's not going to be a game show, and it's not going to be a show interviewing people about games. It's going to be more of an entertainment type of thing, I think is the best way to describe it. But yeah, I do know there's one more, in the works. And there may be another one, but I'm not sure. But I do know that I'm not working on either one of those two. I have no time. But yeah, so they're trying to build, I think multiple podcasts. And I think the intent is to keep going with that and maybe even bring in a couple more, like maybe, you know, if other people come up and say, hey, you know, I'd like to build a show for you. Much the way, did Ben start the podcast network you guys are in?
He's the motivating force behind it. I think I kind of had the idea of saying, I saw you had an old school actual play podcast. Why don't we do a thing and combine all our podcasts and cross promote? And it might be more of a loose confederation than an official sort of network, so to speak. But then it kind of grew from that, setup.
And how many shows are in yours? I mean, I know you got yours. You got Wargamer Recon. I know Ben used to do Indie Talks. He hasn't done it in a while.
He's supposedly going to be kind of booting it back up again, but he's sidetracked because there's another show, which I don't think I'm allowed to say much. I'm not even sure I'm allowed to say this, but I'm going to anyway. Another show that he might be working on for another very famous, popular tabletop gaming podcast network.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
And then we have a role-playing game podcast that's really more of a story. It's a great narrative that's done, set in a certain custom role-playing world that's done, and each episode's like 5-10 minutes long, and you kind of explore the creatures of that world. So it's like diving into a monster manual sort of thing.
Oh, sweet.
But through a first-person narrative. We have this show that I do. I kind of sometimes do, sometimes don't do my other show, Geeks Explicitly.
Yeah, okay, that's yours, right, all right.
And then we have a new show that we just added from Australia, which is another historical wargaming kind of podcast, but with an Australian bent on it, which is it's really, really cool to be able to tap into that market because there's so much going on in Australia down there, and it's really nice to be able to get into that. But that's done by Joshua Shoebridge, It's called The Hobby Desk, which just like it's a fun podcast. And it's neat because with that one, he actually started it because he's a listener of this show. And I guess in one or a few episodes, I said, if you like what you do, you should do a podcast about it. Find what makes you passionate. And he's like, I will do this. And so.
I will do this.
There you go. Exactly. So it's funny. All the emails from him, I have to learn Australian slang because he'll say things and I'm like, what does this mean? I don't understand.
So you bugging it all up.
It's an education, but it's great. But you were saying, so you're only going to be producing these two shows for the TSI Podcast Network. So as a producer, what do you do? What's your role? And like, cause you have your own show. You got Studio 187, you got Mythwits, and like that takes a lot of time. Plus, I mean, like your real job and your family and everything. What is for you, what does podcast producer mean?
It means hell. No, it's all right. So, and you're going to agree. Watch this. So for Game School, I have to watch all the shows like when they happen live. So I sit in the room with them when they do the show live. So it's Chad and Satine. So Chad Parrish and Satine Phoenix, are the hosts. And they, of course, we have a guest on, and then there's me. And then for the most part, I don't say much. Matter of fact, for the first 7 episodes, I never said anything. And then we were talking and Chad was like, you really should chime in a little bit. He's like, you do most of the work on this show. And he's like, and what's going to happen is people are going to get to know the show and they're only going to know me and Satine. And you're doing, you know, all the behind the scenes work and you're not going to get any credit. No one's going to care who you are. And then I was like, cause he's like, they only care about the face of the shows. It's like, yeah, I know. We were talking about that. And I was like, oh, I'm okay with it. He's like, no, really. You should come on, do something, you know, just like participate a little bit. So that's what I do. I do kind of sit in on that and I will comment a little bit. I keep my comments to the minimum because it's really Chad and Satine's show. And I do the commercial in the middle. So, cause we always do a commercial for somebody. So I got a little bit of FaceTime on there and, but see, that's the easy part, right? That's the part everybody likes being talent, right? So then I have to edit the show. So I edit it and I put together the show notes and then I send them to, Jason and he puts it up on the website. So edit a show. Okay. So then Cube of Death. So for Cube of Death, I actually write the adventures for that. So, a little different than how you played it. So let me go. I have to explain Cube of Death for you to understand this. So, and we haven't really talked about exactly how it works anyway. So, James will read a bit of a background on the adventure that you're having that night. So he'll say, you know, the last one we did, the Maker's Labyrinth, you know, the Maker is a supervillain most foul and blah, 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 blah. And he likes he draws heroes into his lair and tries to get them to survive the, you know, the horrors within. And, he found the Oryx, which gave him ultimate power. So this is narrative in the beginning. So then we start the game and each person has picked a character. So it's three players and each one has picked a class. So a ranger or a monk or a, you know, whatever. Or if you're playing in the space version, cause there's different versions. There's fantasy, space, cyberpunk, there's different versions. So let's say you're playing a D&D version or, you know, I'm sorry, a fantasy version.
not D&D. Copyrighted by.
Not D&D. So you're playing, say, a ranger and a monk and a thief. So the three of you are going through this dungeon. But you're competing, so you're not going together. You're not a party. You're each your own adventurer. You have a special ability that you can use. That's what that class gives you. It's like a game mechanic. So, you know, you might be able to steal a person's question or you might be able to scry for an answer. If you're like playing like a magic person, you might be able to scry for an answer, which means you get to get on the internet and look up an answer. So then as you go through, we take turns. So it would be like, let's say it was your turn. James would read a description of a room that you enter. You know, you enter the room and it's dark and torch lit and smoke fills the air. And a big ogre steps forward and says, my dinner has arrived. To resolve this conflict, you have to answer a question in science fiction or fantasy, right? So then you'd pick a category. He'd read the question. If you get it right, you defeat the ogre without taking any damage. If you get it wrong, well, you still consider to defeat them, but you got beat up. And if you had any kind of magic items, you don't get those. So that's how it goes. It goes person to person, boom, 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 down the line. And the game continues until only one person has hit points left. So once the other two are killed, then you're the winner. And we've got a time pretty good. We usually make it to the last room. We've always made it to the last room. So that works out. We've got it planned out pretty good. So then I have to take all that audio and edit it. And I'm actually on that show. So I'm the Ed McMahon of that show. James runs it, but he's like, you know, I make decisions on things like, will we take that answer? I'd be like, yes, that's a good answer. We'll take it. You know, it's like, oh, it's close, but nah, I can't take that one. You know, that kind of thing. And I roll the damage. So I have this is my Cube of Death damage roller. So you'll hear on the podcast like, oh, you got that wrong. You'll take, oh, 1 point of damage. You know, so, and then I keep score. But then I have to edit all that audio and then I get a little crazy. I put a background track to it. So like an ambient, background track. So if you're in a dungeon, you'll hear like, air blowing through every once in a while and you'll hear footsteps and maybe some drops and rats every once in a while. I found a website that will generate, ambient sounds. So you set up different audio tracks and it'll generate this like half an hour long thing that randomly picks those things. And then I'll put in sound effects. I'll sprinkle sound effects in. So like when they first enter the dungeon, I might have the door like, and then every once in a while, you know, it's like you come across a large beast and he howls and you hear this roar. So I throw a little bit of that in there. Not too much because I don't want it to be obnoxious. That show takes me a while to edit. So that's what I do for them. But then I've also got the Myth Witch, which I have a lot of. We don't edit afterwards. We do a lot of pre-work. And then I still do the Tri-Tac podcast. So, but fortunately for that, I'm just talent. I just have to show up.
You're right. Editing is the bane of, I think, every podcaster and producer's existence.
Yeah.
Even if you only do light editing.
Yes.
Still, it's a lot of work. And, I'm thankful that long ago I made a few decisions. One, I was going to really, really work on not editing a whole lot.
Right.
And two, any editing I do, most of it's not manual, actually. When I go through and make the show sound a little bit better, I just manually basically get rid of any long silences or, an occasional, or if people happen to hear me breathe, I'm asthmatic. So that ends up being a little more noticeable. But other than that, I have it all computerized. There's a service I use and it goes to that, and they do a fantastic job of just normalizing everything, leveling it out, getting an equalized sound value on it so that no matter what device someone's listening to, you get a consistent level of volume.
Right.
Don't having to always go up and down between sections and stuff. And so it does that while I sleep, and it's great. But I think for me, show notes are actually maybe the bane of my existence.
Yeah. Well, see, fortunately, I don't have to do big show notes because, like, for me, it's just, you know, it's like a little blurb for, say, Cube of Death, you know. This week, they go up against the Maker. Will the team survive? Join us as, you know, Ben Gerber and blah, 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 take on, this adventure into, the depths of the labyrinth. And then, that's it. That's like really all I need to really do. Cause it's basically just get people to listen. Cause I don't want to tell you who won, and I can't tell you highlights of it because that's gonna be like spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Now for Game School, you know, I mentioned the game and the person that we're interviewing, and then I put in a few links like to their website or to their RPG Now page or whatever. And then that's it. I'm light on show notes because I found that I hate doing them. Like I hate doing show notes more than anything. Cause then that, you know, I used to do it for the TriTac podcast and we got away from that because I would like go in and say at 53 minutes and 23 seconds, we started talking about this. So I'd have to actually go through and write them all down. I was like, oh, I can't do this.
I did that in 2006 and seven. And I said, oh, what the heck am I doing? Why am I giving time codes for everything?
Nobody cares.
No, they don't. I've made the mistake or the smart decision, I'm not sure how one would phrase it, to pay a lot of attention to my SEO scores, my search engine optimization for people who don't know nor necessarily care. Basically, it means try to make the show in the episode more findable for people.
Right.
And part of that is I make a conscious decision on the length of show notes, how many words do I have, the reading level. I try to aim for that newspaper reading level that is ideal of the sixth grade reading level. In the certain terms I use. So I have special, plugins and add-ons for the website that kind of help with that. And then I have custom descriptions for my Google listings that show up automatically. And then they're different from iTunes, which pulls from different setups. So I spend time doing that kind of stuff. And then for me, I think what maybe even the trickier aspect of doing the show notes is choosing what to call out from that for, promoting on social media, primarily Facebook, but on Twitter. I mean, you only have 140 characters on Twitter, so that's hard. And on Facebook, trying to find the right metric and design to use. But taking that all from what's in the show notes.
Pain in the ass. It's not only that. It's like, when do you post it on Facebook? Because, you know, there are certain times where you'll get the most exposure for a post. And if you don't post it during those times, it'll just zip past. No one will ever see it.
And it varies, too,
right?
On your show, your audience. Like for me, I don't know if you've ever, are you a George Takei fan?
Yeah.
Okay. So he wrote this book. Oh my, it's an ebook. It's funny. It's great though. Cause it talks about his meteoric rise as a Facebook star, and about what he does with it. So I actually borrow from that. For example, he has this rule, which I've adopted. Nothing goes up on Facebook without a picture because people don't see it. And according to him, and again, all the social media people change how their secret sauce, how they're going to do stuff. But generally on Facebook, you don't want to post closer than 3 hours, from one post to another. So I set it up. I know I want my first post of a new episode to go out on the Monday morning because they come out every other Monday, Monday morning, 8:20 a.m. Eastern Standard or Daylight Savings Time. Next one comes out at noon. And then the next one, I added a third one. I used to do two, but I added a third one at either 4 or 4:30 p.m. because as more and more of my listeners are in the UK, they're in Australia, they're in Southeast Asia and Africa and stuff, I really need to be posting during the nighttime, our time, your time, to reach them, which is in morning. For people in Australia, if I'm posting at midnight here, it's like 9 or 10 in the morning over there. It's ideal. So, but it's cool because something like a Facebook or even Twitter, there's free tools so that you can kind of look and it tells you for your audience what is the best time to share. Mm-hmm. And I just schedule all that out in advance. So
What service do you use to schedule that in advance?
I do it straight on Facebook, but I'm signed up with Buffer. I just haven't spent a lot of time with Buffer to do it on that and on Twitter, but you just go into the Facebook page for it.
Oh, that's right. It does have a scheduler, doesn't it?
It has a built-in scheduler. You can, you can backdate your content if you wanted to for whatever reason. And, one thing I'm doing, which probably isn't completely kosher, which is why I really try to make sure I give tons of credit in the textual content, is any videos I want to share. I don't just share the video because it usually is a link to a YouTube video, which doesn't get seen by as many people. I upload the video to Facebook, which then enhances its exposure. And if it's not my video, I'll be like, check out this episode of Cupid Death. It was produced by TSR and you can find it originally here, but really watch it here. And I'll just have the video up on it that way because then more people will see it. But but you're right. It's a time sink for anyone really, but especially for like, that's your job, which is like, you got to do this shit.
If I had, you know, the proper staffing to do this stuff, you know, I would have, I understand now why companies hire social media people. Like if you're a bigger company and you can afford to have someone do all your social media, I see why that's really handy because like I'm doing that. And then, you know, trying to keep up with the web page and then trying to keep up with, you know, I got to track down guests and schedule them. And it's just, you know, like every one of these is almost a person that you could use to do this kind of stuff. Or if you didn't have to work a full-time job, you could probably do all of them. But like, you know, having a full-time job and having a family and a small child and, oh my God, I'm just, people always talk about these TV shows they watch, right? And they're like, oh, you watch blah, blah, blah. You watch this, you watch it. I'm like, I don't watch TV. I have 2 shows I watch. Well, now I've got 3, but none of these shows come on at the same time. So I have The Walking Dead, which is on not the same time Game of Thrones is on. So like these seasons run, they don't run parallel. They run consecutive. You know, it's like once this one's done, then this one will play. And then when that one's done a little bit later, this one will start. So that's handy. So I really am only watching 1 TV show at a time. That's all I allow myself is like 1, maybe 2 hours a week of TV. And other than that, you know, I'm editing podcasts, spending time with the family or writing episodes or whatever, but it's what I like doing. And then I've taken to lately working at lunchtime. So I'll be at work. I take my laptop to work and I'll eat my lunch and edit podcasts. But I don't know. It's a labor of love.
You're not alone. Yeah. The stuff you say, I'm like, it rings true for me because, I'll do the same thing. I used to go for walks at lunch at work. I get an hour lunch at work and we have these beautiful trails behind where I work. It's a very affluent community and they care about the environment. So there's tons of great places to walk. So I used to, you know, be healthy and go and get exercise. And then I was like, oh, well, I got to brainstorm what I'm going to do for the next episode. I need to schedule my guest for this and track them down. I get this and since the show's done live, I have to make sure everything's set up on Google for all that. And then writing the show notes is another thing I tend to do during my lunch breaks. But you're right. We wouldn't do this stuff if we didn't like it. I think there tends to be a clear divide between the so-called content creators and the content consumers. Those who are creating don't usually have time or as much time to do as much consuming and vice versa. Right. It's kind of what makes people excited and, I agree with you with the social media stuff. Being a podcaster or a podcast producer, you kind of a one-man shop, which makes it tricky. However, in my spare time when I'm not, you know, doing my job or being a dad or doing this, I'm doing social media for, I belong to the local Friends of the Library group. So I'm the social media person for that. And I'm one of, I think we're up to a dozen or 14 people. For our local church, they call it a ministry, but it's a social media committee. And there's like 14 of us to do social media for the church it's Facebook. That's a lot of people, right? So 14 people and it's great because they have a cross range of age and demographic. It's not all men and, you know, and all sorts of different stuff. And it's helpful, but 14 people. And then I come home and I'm like, So it's me. Let's see what I got to do for Wargaming Recon. Or it's you, Peter, and what do I have to do for TSR and for Mythoids?
Yeah, I know, right? It's crazy. But you know, I'll tell you, there have been times where I've just been, I have questioned, you know, I'm like, am I going to keep doing this? I'm like, really? I mean, I make nothing. I make no money. This costs me money, if anything. So like when people talk about, oh, I guess you're doing pretty well with the podcast, I'm like, you can have every penny I make. So you owe me money. But, but I'm like, you know, so I question why I do it. I'm like, I do all this work, and my wife does too. She's like, why? You know, you do all this stuff, you don't make any money at it, you know? And I do it because I get to meet cool people, and it's amazing how many people I know now and like interact with, and it's just, it keeps life interesting, and all the stuff I've learned. And, you know, if I ever get around to publishing my, the game I've been working on, I have like a million people to reach out to help me get the word out and stuff. So that's really cool. I mean, that's, you know, I know so many game creators now, like tons and tons of them, game creators, writers, artists, podcasters. You know, it's like when Rogue Chess, when we did the Rogue Chess, you know, I got in touch with you. I was like, hey, can you help me spread the word? And you're like, yeah, I'd love to. And like with this, you know, I contact you and I said, Jonathan, I want to get on your podcast and promote, you know, TSR's podcast. And you're like, yeah, sure, sounds great. So that's mainly why I do it. I think it's a lot of fun.
Cool. Some people watch sports, some people garden, we podcast.
Yeah. I can't imagine doing the other two at all. Gardening sucks. I know some people love it. Yeah. I know some people love it, but it's not for me. And I don't do the sports ball, any of them. I'm not a sportsy person. And people pick on me about that too. My buddy Dave.
Sports.
He contacted me the other day. I was talking about something and I was like, I'm going to miss this and stuff. And he goes, hey, on the upside, football season starts tonight. You know, any news? Like, you know, I was like, yay. Awesome. And I get to hear about, in my area, the Ravens every friggin' 5 minutes.
Well, we've been having the breaking news for months about Deflategate and Deflategate getting overturned. And not to diminish people who care about those things, but really for me, breaking news is like Timmy's stuck in a well and Lassie has to go get him, right?
Right.
Or he's going to die.
Right.
Not, we don't know, was air purposely or not purposely removed from the ball before use, and then maybe was it reinflated? That is not breaking news. Not for
me. Especially when, you know, the people are all freaking fired up about that, right? But like one of their players is indicted for killing somebody, you know, and it's just like, oh, well, you know, I should give, you know, I hope he's okay. And blah, blah, blah. He's being accused of killing somebody. Really? You're upset because somebody deflated a freaking football. You know, cause it interfered with your game. But anyway, let's not knock on people who like sports. Cause you know what? If you like sports, great. Good for you. Have at it. Enjoy.
I'm lucky. It's actually a partial promise because of a conversation that, I've had with my wife, kind of like what your wife and you have had about podcasting. It was, when my daughter was born, I made the decision that the show really had to kind of provide for itself more. Cause it was almost, I'm going to say like 80% funded by me, my wife and I and stuff. And what happened to that kid, that money's not there anymore. And so it's either, do you scale back? Do you not do? And, or do you keep on doing and keep on pulling it from the empty wall? Like, how does it work? So that's why I have the Patreon account that does a lot. It helps. I get a new sponsor, which is great. And my goal, for the near future is to be able to get to a point where, I'm almost revenue neutral, where I don't have to put any of my own money into it. I don't want to make money. I'm not looking to get rich. I mean, that'd be nice, but I'm not realistically. I know it's not going to happen, right? Who has ever heard of a rich podcaster?
They do. You know what? It's funny. They do exist. It's just.
But they're not rich because of podcasting. They're rich because they have products. They do passive income. They do other stuff. They use a podcast to promote what actually makes them the money, or they run
courses and stuff. They were really famous and now they're a podcaster because you got guys like Adam Carolla, mm-hmm. right? He did not get rich off his podcast. His podcast, you know, he makes money off his podcast, but not because he started this podcast from scratch and was just like, hi, I'm this guy, Adam Carolla. You've never heard of me, but you know, it's kind of like when Monty Cook did his Kickstarter and made like $1 million off of it. And then he wrote a book, which I was to this day, and I've mentioned this before, I may have even mentioned on your show, so I apologize if I'm repeating, but basically he then turned around and wrote a book on how to make a lot of money on Kickstarter. And, you know, I was just like, what's the first chapter? You know, here's my first tip. Be me, be a famous person, and then launch your Kickstarter. It's like the Exploding Kittens, right?
Yep.
That would have never made as much money as it did. Never. I mean, I understand why people bought into it and it looks cool and everything like that, but it would never have made that much money if it hadn't been the guy from the oatmeal. I mean, it's just, you know, that's the fact. So yeah. If you're rich doing a podcast, you probably were rich already and you probably already had a name and a brand and all that good stuff.
Yeah. And there are people who they do well and part of it is because of the podcast, because of the promoting it, and people who've built it up. And right. I can think of some that I listen to and I like, I wouldn't call them rich. And maybe, I mean, that's kind of a sliding scale, right? For people, yeah. What's rich to one is not to another. And,
What are the guys that do the reviews, the board game reviews?
Tom
Vassell?
Dice Tower.
Dice Tower. Okay. So Dice Tower, that podcast, he made enough money off of raising money that's his job. Like he made enough to quit his job. And that's cool. I mean, and apparently from my understanding, they work very hard at that podcast. Or he does. I don't know. I think who's the other guy? Summerer, Michael Summerer.
Oh yeah.
But I think Tom does the vast majority of the work on that, I think. Don't quote me.
No, you're right though, because I think he does apparently because since I think they did it as a Kickstarter actually.
Yeah.
They raised that money and the money was so that he could do it as a job.
Right.
And his cohort does like voiceover work and he does he narrates audiobooks and other stuff, so that's his work and he does this on the side.
Right.
I'm sure if they had the funding for both of them to do it, that they probably would, is my guess. I don't know. I have no inside knowledge into Dice Tower.
And there's also, you know, there's also like, what does your podcast do? Like, for example, like yours, Wargaming Recon, right? I'm surprised. I mean, and I know you are too, but I think it's great at the numbers that you get, the audience that you get, cause it's a bit of a niche, you know? I mean, like podcasting is a niche and then Wargaming is a bit of a niche of a niche, you know? Like for example, the TriTech podcast that we do, we have great numbers for that. And I just don't understand it because TriTech is not a company that most people have heard of. Most people have never heard of the game Fringeworthy. You know, you talk about role playing games. I've talked to so many role players who have never heard of it. It's been around forever, right? But we get great numbers and it's kind of like, it's kind of weird. You know, I'm just like kind of freaked out by it. Cause I'm just like, it's a niche of a niche of a niche. I mean, it's role playing, which is a niche of podcasting, but it's an obscure role playing game company rather. Right? So it's like not even many role players have heard of it. So it's interesting. I don't know.
I would say I'm pleasantly shocked.
Yeah. 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 Like for example, for the TSR stuff, that's pretty generic. Like Cube of Death and Game School, Game School covers all role playing games. So I could see the entire role playing audience potentially being interested in that. Cube of Death, I've got people at work that are listening to it who aren't gamers, they're just people who like podcasts. And they love it. So like I could see that crossing a lot of lines. Like I could see those numbers getting pretty big potentially.
Well, that's one of the cool things I think about what is being done with the TSR podcast network, because you have that core where the initial audience is clearly going to be some sort of gamer, role playing gamers. Absolutely. I would say at first are both shows. But then because they're exciting and funny enough and engaging enough, they're able to spread beyond that. So you have your core group who's always going to be there, I think. You keep on delivering that same quality content, they will be there, but then you're able to grow it out and to reach people who you grandma down the street or whatever will be like, I like that Cube of Death and I can't wait for the next game show. And it's maybe not so much for the content, but because of the people involved and the way it's presented.
I'll tell you what excites me about Cube of Death podcast. It really, really excites me is that I've been trying to get cons to pick it up, like to run it officially at cons, like an official con function. And I have Total Con is the only place, only because Angela lets me do whatever the hell I want to do, right? If I didn't have that freedom, it would never get run there. She's just like, yeah, do whatever. But like, so for Balticon, I tried to run it at Balticon. They have never given me the time of day, never even responded to it. Like they let me run on panels. They let me do other things, but Cube of Death, it's like as if I didn't even mention it. Same thing. I tried to get it at Dragon Con, no go there. And obviously Gen Con, I can't get anything going there other than running, you know, regular games. But with the podcast, if it gets some popularity and I can also point people to it and say, all right, I know it's hard to understand the concept of this because it's a new thing. It's, you know, what do you mean role playing trivia? What I don't understand. So the trivia about D&D is like, no. It's a game. It's hard for me to explain it to people, but with this, I can just point to the podcast. Just listen to this. Trust me. You'll like it. It'll work at your convention. It'll be fun. And hopefully they'll go, oh yeah, I get it. It's awesome. Let's do it. So I would very much like to start running this at cons more often, as like participation type of, as an exhibition type of event. So you have your players, but then you do it in front of a live audience and like people watch and, you know, they can enjoy it. Cause then like one of the things where it's like, you can scry for an answer by any means necessary. It doesn't have to be internet. They could actually poll the audience, or they could say, does anybody in the audience know the answer to this question? You know, and you have like 30 seconds to get an answer from somebody, and you have people shouting out things like, oh no, that's it. Right. I'm going to go with that one. I think that would be fun. And also if somebody gets one, let's say they get it wrong, I could go to the audience and say, if anybody knows it, I have a prize I can give away to you. You know, and if somebody, you know, pick somebody and say, yeah, it's Blyano or whatever, you know, and then I'd be like, oh yeah, come on up, you get a prize. So I want to do that kind of stuff. I think that'd be fun.
Well, from the first time I saw it played, I was in one of those audiences. I thought, why the heck isn't this everywhere? Because this is such a great premise. It's innovative. It's different. It's fun. It should be at every convention, Gen Con on down. It should be at PAX. It should be, and when I discovered it wasn't, I was kind of let down. I'm thinking, what do people not understand about this? It's fun. It's engaging. It's funny. It's gaming.
You have the ability to see it. You got to see it live and it makes sense to you. It's very hard to explain to people. I have failed in explaining it to people properly. So I'm hoping I can just give them a link and go listen to this. You'll get it.
So for people who want to tune in, and I think everyone should definitely give it a chance to tune in to both Cube of Death and to Game School, how can they get access to the episodes? When do they come out? And I presume they're recorded live. Do they get access to the live recordings too?
No. Okay. So they're not recorded live. We record these, so MythWits is live recorded, but these shows are recorded ahead of time and then I edit them and put them up. So you can find both of them at tsrpn.com. Or you can go individually, gameschool.tsrpn.com or cubedeath.tsrpn.com. So well, they come out every other week and they leapfrog. So we have 3 episodes of Game School out and 3 episodes of Cubedeath out. And then we put up several of them ahead of time all at once. So the show, the network just launched like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. So we put a couple episodes up so that people could listen to a couple of them all at once. But basically this Monday, a new Game School goes up, which is going to be episode 4. And then next Monday, it's Cube of Death. And then the next Monday, it's Game School and then so on and so forth. So for Game School, we've already done Jay Libby's G-Core. That was episode 1. Episode 2 was, Godlike. Episode 3, just went up last week. That was Torchbearer with, Luke Crane. I don't know if you're familiar with Luke Crane. He did Mouse Guard and Burning Wheel. So Torchbearer is his latest game. So he was on. He was an awesome guest. And then the one that's going up this Monday is, Brennan Taylor's, Bulldogs. And then we did one with James Desbera. That's how you pronounce that. We did one with, it's easy to remember when I've edited them, but before I edit them, I'm trying to remember. Oh yeah, we did Hobomancer. That was really awesome. You know, I thought that would be a cool episode. And then we did it and I was like, this game is awesome. This was so much fun. So that was a good one. And then for Cube of Death, we have recorded, 6, 7. So we've done 7 episodes. 3 of them are up. And the way that works is there's going to be 13 in season 1. So we have 13 episodes. So you have the first 9 episodes, which are the playoffs basically, or your initial round. And each one of those is going to have a winner. So there'll be 9 winners. And then, so that breaks off into three games of 3. So that's the semifinals. And then there's a championship. So one person is going to walk away the champion of Cube of Death. And they actually, I'm having a 3D model printed up that I designed and they're actually going to get a Rubik's Cube sized cube of death that will go to them that breaks out into 9 pieces. And they have rare earth magnets. So when you put it together, it'll stick together. So it's really cool. So I think it's a really cool thing to give to the winner.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to do that. We're going to do it season by season. So we're going to have a competition. We'll do the first season. The next season, we'll have another champion. And I've already thought of some variations to the game that I want to add. So it's going to be like Cube of Death 2.0. It's going to be new rules and stuff. So, you know, if you like this, wait till next season. We got some cool new rules coming along. So yeah, that's TSR Podcast Network.
And I presume people can get them from iTunes or their favorite podcasting app and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all out in the open. Yeah. Oh, and we have, another thing is we really encourage. So if you listen to it, let me implore you, every one of you, please subscribe. Please rate us. You know, you don't have to leave a review, although reviews are much appreciated, but give us some stars. And it's really, really important. I mean, I don't know, Jonathan, I don't know how much you push people to do this, but it's really, really important to us podcasts. I mean, we work our butts off doing these things. All we ask is for just please give us some stars. You know, that's like, you know, that is like our lifeblood when it comes to getting the word out and stuff. Cause the more people who leave stars for, you know, like leave 5 stars. Yeah. Don't leave 1 star. If you're going to leave 1 star, I'd rather you don't leave anything, but
you didn't listen.
right. Yeah. Pretend you didn't. But if you're going to leave 3, 4, or 5 stars, then please do. It gets us exposure and it gets more listeners and it gives us the opportunity to do more stuff for you. So it's encouragement for us to do more stuff. So yeah. So please do that and do it for Jonathan's show too. If he hasn't asked you enough, go to Wargaming Recon and leave reviews for Jonathan. See how you like that. I'm promoting your stuff too. On your
you are. That's funny. No, but you're right though, because those reviews and ratings, at least for iTunes anyway, they take them into account for where you show up in the new and noteworthy category. Yes. And the higher you are up in there, the more likely other people will see the show and more likely people will see it, then we'll give it a try. And then they'll tell their friend and their friend will tell their coworker and their coworker will say, hey, this is really good, and tells their spouse and tells their kids. And then next thing you know, that one listener who left you that rating in the review ended up giving you 50 more listeners.
Yep. Our shows will always be free. The only thing we ask is that you leave us a review or star. You don't have to write anything, just stars. Just give us some stars. So that's it.
What if someone wanted to leave a review that was only stars and they just put stars in the review?
Okay. You could do that. Well, you have to click the stars, the number of stars. You got to rate it. And then you could then, I don't know, can you, go into the character map and.
Yeah. You go into, it just like copy and paste like 20 stars into there.
Yeah.
That's the review.
You can do that. You totally. Absolutely. If somebody does that and then emails me, I'll give them something. I don't know what I'll give you.
Well, now that you said that, I'm totally going into iTunes and
I'll give you something.
Like 50 stars. And be like, new Cube of Death episode. Star. That's my review.
You know, I can't guarantee anything, but Jason does run Gygax magazine. There may be, you know, he may have some stuff he could give away. Who knows?
I'm actually... One of the things that I like about the TSR Podcast Network is that it is connected to, of course, TSR, but also to Gygax Magazine, because one of the individuals, she's done some cartography work for Gygax Magazine, is going to be coming on, and I don't actually know when she's coming, but she's going to be coming on a future episode of the show, because she's a fan of all things ancient Rome, so we're going to be talking about ancient Rome, and she did her own Kickstarter that's a little controversial, but we're going to have a fun and friendly conversation about it, but Alyssa Faden, of Torn Armor and
I've heard of her. Okay,
yeah.
I've heard of her.
She did the star map for Gygax Magazine, issue 1, I believe.
That's right. Okay.
I was flipping through it because I got a signed copy. If I was smart, I would have had it to show people live instead of it being in my bookcase. But I was flipping through and I was like, wait a sec. I know this name.
Hey, do you listen to podcasts much? I mean, do you have time to listen to podcasts?
It's basically all I do when I'm at work.
Okay.
You know, in addition to actually working and that kind of stuff. I don't want people to think, I sit there all day and do nothing and
you want to
listen to this and be like, wait, you don't actually do anything? No, I do my work and I can listen to podcasts.
You want to one up or on some of the Roman stuff? Listen to there's a show called Hardcore History with Dan Carlin.
Yep.
Awesome show. I don't know if you've ever listened to it, but he has a whole series on Rome, which was fantastic. You know, you can be like, hey, did you happen to know this, Alyssa?
It's funny because I've connected to her on Facebook, and so I see all her Facebook postings. And every day, it's a photo, because she's smart. It's a photo of something Roman. And sometimes she'll put in a comment, people think I'm too violent because I'm always sharing these things. And then she'll do like a photo of like, or illustration rather, of like a happy Roman just kind of hanging out, or like the Roman baths or whatever. And the next one, it's warfare, like people decapitating each other. It's
nice.
She's a very intelligent person, so it's exciting.
Cool.
So that's how people can get in touch, and they want, be sure to copy and paste all those stars in the reviews for and for Game School.
Oh, and just real quick, just because I'm promoting somebody, don't forget to check out studio187.com. That's where you can find links to all this stuff as well. And you can find this little show we do called The Mythwits, which is a fun show. You can also, check out the Rogue Chess, which is a game that I do. And then I think is that it? Is that all I got? Right. Yeah. I think that's all I got. Yeah. But you can comment this on there.
I can vouch for all that one because, of course, I'm not smart enough to have it handy, but I get my copy of Rogue Chess here and I've been on Mythwits and, It's all good stuff, people. Plus, I always talk about you when I do my annual TotalCon episode, which is cool. And I'll be at TotalCon for 2016, so I'll get to see you again in person. You'll get to meet the baby. She won't be a baby then, but you'll get to meet.
Sweet. There you go. There's Rogue Chess.
There you go. It's so good.
I'm looking forward to meeting the little one.
She keeps it interesting.
You couldn't go last year. I was disappointed.
Yeah, she was born like the week before or something like that.
Yeah, no.
I was trying to find my way to this thing called sleep. It hid. I don't know where it went.
They eat it. It's like their magical power. They absorb all your sleep.
Something happens because it vanishes one day and then you just hope it comes back from wherever it went, the lost lands.
I love when new parents, like people who haven't had kids yet or they're getting ready to, and they're like, well, I'm going to exercise while the baby's sleeping and I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I'm just like, no, you're not going to do anything. I was like, do me a favor. When the baby goes to sleep, go to sleep.
You're going to hope you can find something to eat, might be able to get yourself to the bathroom and maybe take a shower and sleep if you're lucky.
And if you go out to a restaurant, you know, the two of you got to work as a team. One of you eats while the other one holds the baby. You take turns. Yeah. Like we had a good system because I'm a fast eater. So like we would sit down and I would eat first. My wife would be like, you eat first because you eat way faster than I do. So then I would eat my dinner or whatever we're eating. Right. And then I would take the baby and let her eat. And then, you know, if London started crying or whatever, I would get up because we're not one of those parents. I would get up and walk around with her, take her outside or whatever, and let my wife eat. So yeah, it's a chore. I gotta hand it to any single parent. That is some crazy. Being a single parent's gotta be insane.
I don't know how they do it.
No,
but
I don't know how married people do it.
It's hard. You know, even when there's just times when say either my wife or I, where it's just us with the baby and I'm thinking, well, it really would be nice to have that extra set of hands right now to go get that bottle or to grab something. You get yourself cut. So.
And we only have one, right? Think about it. I know there's probably a parent listening to this who has like four kids where it's like amateurs.
One of my listeners, he's actually going to get thanked by name in a little bit because he's a Patreon backer, but he just had his second. She's like 3 weeks old, 2 weeks old. So he has his eldest son and then they just had a daughter and he's going through it all again. And I feel for him. I really do.
I'm done. One and done. I'm good.
Sometimes one's enough, you know?
Yes.
Well, what else do I have? I think that's all I got about your stuff.
Yeah. We covered it. I think we covered it good. I don't want to beat the people over the head too much with it. You know, at this point, just go check out the podcast. You'll like it. Trust me. It's good stuff.
Copy paste stars. That's all I'm going to say now.
Yeah.
Copy pasta. So.
You know what? What's funny is I'm not going to tell anyone to do that. So if we get a bunch of them, I'm going to know how many people watch this episode and actually follow.
Just copy pasta. Right.
Copy pasta.
That's all you can do. People who don't understand copy pasta should be thankful they've never been on 4chan. That's all I'm going to say. So, moving forward, we got our mailbag section of the show. It's one of my favorite parts because I get to hear from all of you and I get to share some of that with people here on the show. So usually I say, I have Twitter and we use it for the show, but not really, and I don't do anything on it. Well, last episode we talked about Twitter, and this episode we're going to talk about it again. And because people are on Twitter seem to like the show. So first of all, listener at Drake Poldragon said of episode 143, which was the last episode, he said, quote, check out this cool episode. The Tufts sound great. Amazing value. So thank you at Drake Poldragon for saying that. I agree. These Tufts, they're from Australia. It's what I was mentioning to you. Pete, they are fantastic. And I know you're not like a miniatures painter kind of guy. You should just buy some.
I've done it.
Pick up, they're dirt cheap. You get like 140 of these things. And here I'm doing my infomercial. Leadbeer's Tufts should pay me to be this spokesperson. But you get this sheet of Tufts. The guy makes them in his kitchen. He's a stay-at-home dad, right? He makes these Tufts. They have fantastic quality. You get between 120 and 140 of them on a sheet, depending on the size you want. And it costs $7.31 American for these things. You go to the local game store to get them from the big name company, you're lucky to get 20 of them for like $8.
So miniatures Tufts, are these like little like balls that you put on there to make it like your lance, like your,
it looks like clumps of grass and stuff.
Okay.
And so instead of getting, you know, just like little pieces of grass, or whatever, and like trying to do like, he did all the work. You get it. It has an adhesive on it and you just pick it up with your fingers or tweezers and you put it where you want it and it stays.
Ah, nice.
They look amazing and they're dirt cheap. Plus, actually, because
I get what you did. They're dirt cheap.
They're dirt cheap. Yes. You got it's like dad jokes already, right?
Right. There we go. Yeah.
It actually helps out a charity too, because the packaging he gets helps out. It's the Royal Society for the Blind, I think it is, down there in Australia. So he buys the packaging. It's dirt cheap. It helps them out, and this helps him out. It's amazing. They are gorgeous, and I can't gush about them enough, which is why listener at Drake Poldragon was like, the Tufts sound great. Cause I think I replied to him on Twitter. I said, they are amazing. Buy as many as you can and then buy more. Just like buy them out. And then listener at Coleman Stryker said, hi, Jonathan. Have you ever, or do you intend to cover any Peter Pig products? And, the short answer is I have not. And I do intend to actually have an order in, but it's funny because when I first heard about Peter Pig way back in the day, and I don't know about you, I would have thought like they were a company that made pigs.
Right.
And as far as I understand, they have nothing to do with pigs whatsoever. But they make really cool historical models. They're from the UK. Peter Pig, they make these really cool small scale models that are very well done. Again, they are affordable. I don't know a dad joke to talk about how affordable they are in relation to pigs. So I can't.
Right.
I can't, I don't know, but they're worth every penny, from what I'm told. Although I
have- They won't hog your whole paycheck.
Oh, ho, ho. I can't wait for them to come. And then on Facebook, which is where, I do a lot of the stuff, and I know, excuse me, I know you have a lot of activity on there for Mythwits and everything. One of the listeners, he's actually from Australia, in fact. He's talking about the same episode, episode 143, and he said, mate, the Tufts are great. I've used them before. So that's a ringing endorsement from someone down under who's had firsthand experience with them. And, these Tufts, I'm obsessed with these things.
I really can tell.
They're so damn good. They're really, it's not often I use this phrase, but for me, they're life changing because I'm not someone who enjoys doing that kind of aspect of tabletop gaming. I have done it when it's necessary. But right. They make it so easy. It saves you time. They actually make me want to do that kind of stuff, which is, I think that's just a reason enough on its own to get it. And then, let's see, what do I have for announcements for everyone? So I told all of you last time, and you already heard the message at the start of this episode, that we have a sponsor finally, the Maine Historical Wargamers Association, who are the folks behind Huzzah. Just want to say yet again how grateful I am to all of them for sponsoring the show, as Peter and I were talking about earlier, it's expensive to do this, and it's nice to not have it come out of the paycheck all the time to cover everything, which is kind of nice. And then I am incredibly grateful to those of you who back the show on Patreon. So I want to thank Dave and the War Games at Battleshades Facebook group, and Jamie, who is at Drake Poldragon on Twitter, for their kind support on Patreon. And Patreon is really cool, and Peter, you should really consider doing a Patreon for Mythwits, and I'll tell you why. You can do all sorts of stuff on there. You can choose different backer levels or make it however affordable you want for people to get at stuff. And one thing I do, I have all these different levels. Like I have a dollar level that it's kind of like a tip jar, right? For less than a cup of coffee, people can say, you know, I like what you do. I get some value out of it. It makes me laugh.
Right.
And here you go. Thanks. The next level up I have is $3 per episode, which is what Jamie and Dave have done. And with that, you get thanked by name in every single episode. So on average, it's like 1300 people, here each episode on average of Wargaming Recon. Your name goes out to 1300 people. It's not a sponsor message. It's not an ad. I have other levels for that, but like people get to hear like that Jamie guy, he must be really cool. And that Dave guy. And what is this Battle Shades Facebook group? But it's because they chose that level. And I mean, they're just good people. But one of the things that I try to do and that I think would work really well for you, I try to give extra content to those who do back on Patreon. So for example, they get all the episodes first. Usually the day before, sometimes 2 days before. Episode's done, right? It doesn't take me extra time to do it. It's going to go out. They get it first. They get to hear it first. They get a special backdoor channel kind of aspect to it so they can then communicate to me. And then I do behind the scenes for just about every episode. I might share audio. I might share, you know, excerpts or just thoughts or whatever that gets put onto Patreon. And it's something that only the people on Patreon get. So that way it's kind of cool. You can some people think of it as like the new Facebook because you have the social media aspect to it, but I just think of it as we have these communities, right, of people who support our shows, whether it's by listening, it's copy paste to the stars for reviews or whatever it is. Right. And it's a way to reach them. And one of the really great things that I think sets podcasting apart from something like radio and it sets podcasters apart who do their own social media as opposed to a team of 14 people doing it is that you have that really down to earth touch where it's so authentic because it's you and it's them. It's just like sitting down, having a cup of coffee with someone, inviting them into your home and having that conversation so that they can chat with you that way. So if I'm on Twitter or whatever, I can chat with people, but on Patreon, I can open up more, and dive into things a little deeper and they can too. So it's kind of cool that you can do that stuff through something like Patreon.
That's a thought. Maybe I should do that. I think, we talked about this before about doing a Patreon for MythWits, but I think we want to get the podcast version of it out in full bloom. Currently we have just a video show and we've put up 10 episodes of the podcast, but it takes time because I got to pull the audio down and we're actually editing them down to 1 hour, just the interview and then just the game. So like our goal is on Mondays we'll release the week after the show. We'll release the podcast version of the interview, and then on Friday we'll release the podcast version of the game. So if you just follow the podcast, you don't have time to watch the 2 hour video, right? Because like the shows are generally 2 hours long, and I understand, you know, we would probably get more viewership if our show was shorter, but then again, then we'd have to cut stuff, and we're like, we've tried to cut it, we're like, I don't know where to cut this. I mean, I like everything that we do. So then we came up with this model. And we're going to do it with the videos too, so that you can watch we're going to call it that channel, the MythWits Live, where you can watch the whole thing, or you can watch just the interviews or just the game shows. So it's like some people really like the game that we play more than the rest of the show. They think that's the funnier part. So we want to offer both of that to people. So I think, Mike has decided that he's going to start actually going to sit down and start doing this editing because I just don't have time with all the other stuff I'm doing. But once we get that going, maybe we'll do the Patreon then. And then, maybe I can encourage Mike. I'll give him all the money from the Patreon so long as, you know, until all the podcast episodes are up and he'll be motivated to do it. I don't know.
Well, one of the cool things with it too, it's kind of like Kickstarter in that you can have, different levels, not only of like backer levels, but like goals is what Patreon calls it.
Yes.
So you can say, if we get this amount and you can do per month, you can do per creation or whatever. I do per creation per episode. If we get this much per episode, then we will do this or we can use that money to do whatever. So like I use it so that, I said, if I get this much, I can afford that service that I use that while I sleep, it edits the show. It makes it sound way better than anything I would do on my own.
Right.
So it just makes it really cool. And I'm actually looking and I think I'll make it, I'm hoping to reach my next goal, which is going to make it easier to get people like you on the show because it's a digital scheduling software kind of thing where, I can get in there. It will sync with all my calendars. I can say I'm available these days and times and just send that to the guest. Which of these is best for you? Pick one, instead of sending emails all the time. I've had guests, and they've been worth it, don't get me wrong, but I've had guests where it's taken me 9 months of emails to nail a time and date down for someone.
Yeah. I might be a little guilty of a little bit of that.
But like, so this helps. And for me to get here, because I priced everything out and everything, I'm only $9 away from it. So that's three people backing at the $3 level. So they get their name said and thanked by name in every episode. I'll reach this goal, which means I get more guests on and I can do all that. And I have a bunch of that kind of stuff. And so that could be really cool too for Mythwits, so that maybe, it would encourage, it to make it easier for you to be able to do the audio and divest the game, say, from the rest, and to really do that. So it just kind of have that goal. And I think people like when they know what the money's could be going for. So yeah. I think they like to just say, no, you know, thank you. Mythwits is a great show. Here's money, but I think they like it better if they're like, oh, so if you reach this goal, if you get like say $10 an episode, then you'll be able to do this and you'll be able to do that. And right. I think that encourages them to back. And it's cool. And Patreon is, it has its faults with some things, but it is by and far the best thing I've come across for this sort of stuff. It's really cool.
I was trying to talk Libby into it.
Oh, he would benefit greatly from it.
Yeah, I was just trying to get him to buy into it, but whatever.
I'll work on him. Right. But Patreon's amazing. It really does help to foster that sense of community. And there are these communities around all the things. All your shows, the TSR Podcast Network will have it. There's a community around Gygax Magazine and J Libby's G Crew has such an amazing community, that's so supportive. And I mean, so it would be really cool, for people to take greater advantage of it.
Yeah. I think TSR is going to be launching a Patreon, but if that happens, it's going to be Jason's deal. I'm not going to do that. That'll be TSR that does it.
Yeah. It has to be at that upper level.
Yeah. Which I like. I like being able to hand stuff off to him. So like, it's kind of funny because I don't have to do everything. So like, you know, he was having problems with the website and he's like, do you know how to do WordPress? I'm like, nope, don't know how to do it. Don't care.
Yeah. Whereas Everett Smith was just like, oh, so how do I do this? I got to look at, I mean, I run Wargaming Recon off WordPress and the fix comes out and you're like, does it really fix or did it? One of my plugins I use for the live stuff, it broke and it's, the person who took over it doesn't have time to work on it right now. They will sometime and they'll fix it, but for now it doesn't. And I'm like, well, what the heck do I do? But with that, you're like, why don't you go and work on it or hire an expert or something?
That's why I went with Squarespace. Because Squarespace is so easy to work with and it's not as open as WordPress. You can't do as much with it. There aren't as many plugins and stuff, but I went through and I was like, it does everything I need it to do. And it's very simple and I can do it myself. And if I need someone else like Mike to go in and fix something or whatever, he can do it. You know, it's not like I have to go, oh, I set it up this way. It's very simple. It's like you just set it up a certain way. And then anyone else who goes in there and does anything, they just, you know, it's drag and drop. It's all drag and drop. So it's like, I want to put a picture in. You click a thing and it says, put a picture in. Click, where do you want it? Here. Okay, done. And it's all, there's no programming needed. It's awesome. So that's why I went with that, because it's like, I don't want to edit anything. I'm done. I got too much stuff to do. I can't be editing websites too.
Yeah.
If I had a website guy, I would let them do a WordPress. That would be awesome. But
well, and if you raise enough money on Patreon, you could go website guy.
I probably could, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, anyway, as always, it's a pleasure having you on. It's
so fun. Thank you. It's a pleasure being on.
And, I can't wait for people to just dive into the shows on the TSR Podcast Network. And I think everyone's really going to enjoy them. You get to spend the time listening and it's so much fun. It really is. And
if you guys want to see Cube of Death live, we are going to be doing it at TotalCon this year. So there's that.
It's such a good game.
And it'll be the new version, what James and I have been doing lately with the adventure, going through the adventure and everything. It won't just be questions. So it should be really fun.
Well, I personally look forward to that. You know, I will be in the audience.
You can play if you want.
Hey, that's a thought. I'll have to jot that down and see how it works out with the schedule, but
yep. Absolutely.
Very cool. So, everyone, next episode comes out on September 28th and I unfortunately don't have a topic down for that, but check our episode guide and you'll be able to see what's going on with that. And then don't forget, show notes for this episode covers everything that we've talked or most everything that we talked about. WargamingRecon.com/WR144. That's WargamingRecon.com/WR144. So thank you again for coming on the show and, Everyone else, you know the deal. No matter how busy you are in your lives, no matter how much is going on, you got to take some time to dive into a little cube of death and always, always keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
You're a wargamer and want to know what to do when you're an Australian wargamer, then you need to tune into the Hobby Desk for Australian wargamers. This is a member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network, and we're here to give you the best possible things that Australian wargamers can give to you, the listeners. And I hope you enjoy what we do, because guess what? It's coming more and more often and more awesome for you who listen to the Hobby Desk on the Troll in the Corner podcast network.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016, at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.